Skies.
Hey, welcome to Montauk Skies. I'm Biggs.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Sam.
This is Sam. We talked about him a few times, so I think he's going to pretty much lead the way here because he came prepared and I did not.
Okay, well, first I'd like to talk a little about movies. Now, this isn't like a new story, but there's some new updates to it. Ghostbusters 3.
Now, is Bill Murray attached?
No, that would be the update. Dan Aykroyd officially has come out and said that Bill Murray will not do the movie.
Oh my God.
He doesn't want to be involved at all. This was like maybe a week and a half ago. And I mean, I don't know if you were following a few months ago. I'm sure you did. But there was rumors that Bill Murray shredded the script and sent it back to Dan Aykroyd.
No, I didn't hear that.
Well, yeah. That
bad, went, bad, huh?
It went around for a few days and all these media outlets were picking that story up. Completely not true. If anybody would have followed the story, it was by the National Enquirer.
Oh, right away.
Stuff said.
Yeah.
If it had been a reputable source like TMZ.
Yeah,
they
no
stalk
doubt.
Their celebrities.
Yeah, and have footage of like Murray picking his nose or something.
Right.
But yeah, so that's kind of dead in the water. And the thing that sucked...
I mean, and now is it dead in the water or just Bill Murray being attached is dead?
Well, you know, as of right now, they don't know what to do with it. Let's see.
So it's pretty much like...
Well, what
it's not greenlit.
What Aykroyd says right now is he honestly doesn't know what the future is. It's in suspended animation. But the studio, like Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis, who's also co-writing it with Aykroyd... They feel there's a way to do it, but without Murray in it, they're just trying to figure it out. They don't know, and so it's just kind of on hold. And you know, anybody that knows me knows that like Ghostbusters was probably my favorite movie like ever.
It's got to be up there, dude. It's one of my many top fives.
Yeah, no, this is Montauk Skies. We have top fours.
Right, one of my many top fours, depending on my mood.
So I think that's kind of sad.
How do you feel about it? Do you want them to make it without Murray?
You know, my heart says yes, but my brain says no.
So you're conflicted?
I'm conflicted. You know, I want them to make it. I think that maybe they could pull it off. I've thought a lot about, like, what they could do with the third movie. You know, and I think you've said on one of the previous podcasts that if, like, they had Murray as a ghost or something, maybe it would work. I don't know.
Well, that's what he was saying, too, was, like, if he did it, that they would have to kill him off. And so the buzz was that he would be a ghost in it if he was in there. But I don't know if that was ever confirmed.
Yeah, I don't know. But with Murray out, what's the future hold? Does Sigourney Weaver even have a part in it?
I've heard that everybody that they wanted was attached, which included Sigourney Weaver. Like, I heard a statement from Dan Aykroyd on Dennis Miller's show. Mm-hmm. Said that Sigourney Weaver was attached, Rick Moranis was attached.
Oh, yeah, I definitely
all
saw
the original,
Moranis. He's definitely in.
Yeah, all the original Ghostbusters except for Bill Murray were on board. So it sounded like they had everybody but Bill Murray.
Yeah, what a dick.
And I feel conflicted, too, because I've been waiting for this forever and grabbing on the news, and I, for some reason, quit at some point. So I'm glad you brought that up. I'd forgotten to look it up for a while. So there's a little bit of a Ghostbusters boom, I think, when it was being released last Halloween, that, you know, people were aware of it again.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. Like, it's kind of the same. Like, my heart wants there to be another Ghostbuster movie, but my head is saying if Bill Murray doesn't want to do it, like, not only is he my favorite character in Ghostbusters, but, like, probably a bad script. I get that feeling. Considering, like, he does a movie like Zombieland, mm-hmm. It's not like he's above doing that kind of movie anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he proved with that hilarious cameo that, like, he...
Spoiler alert.
You haven't seen it. Oh,
no. It's been out. That's great, dude. This is a show you've definitely seen Zombieland. There's no question about it.
But, I mean, they did, in, I think, 2010, they did that Ghostbusters video, or 2008, they had the video game that had the full cast.
Yeah.
And then at 2010, Murray showed up in his Ghostbusters uniform at the Spike Scream Awards. So, I mean, everybody was thinking, okay, it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon.
And he probably just wasn't happy with the script, I'm guessing.
They, you know,
I mean, I can't imagine.
He never read it, though. Every, like, he kept pushing it off, you know, a few more months here and there.
Oh, that's possible, too. I heard, like, when he went to do Rushmore, that, like, they kept sending him, like, the script, and he kept putting off reading it, and they kept sending him, like, Bottle Rocket, like, the movie they did before that, and he just kept putting off watching it, and then somebody advised him, like, strongly that he should probably do the movie, and so we did it. Mm-hmm. But he never read the script for it or saw the movie, so yeah, that sounds entirely possible.
Russian
too.
Roulette.
Yeah, maybe he needs somebody to read to him. Maybe he's one of those guys now. Like, he's like, hold on, and does the thumbs and the screen.
just read the script like an audiobook, and he can listen to it while he's doing all his golf tournaments.
Yeah.
Which he gets paid a ton of money to do those, by the way.
To do golf tournaments?
Yeah, just crack jokes and play golf. I understand why he's not so up to another movie at this point.
Well, he's kind of the dude who just, like, shows up for a movie in, like, 15 minutes, and you want more. You know what I mean? Like, he's actually done a really good, like, career-wise, he's been really smart, I think. Like, because he was... You gotta figure, like, in the 80s, and a little bit of the early 90s, he was the man, like, for comedy. Like, him and Steve Martin were probably the go-to guys. And then at a certain point, his comedy started to really suck. Like, The Man Who Knew Nothing or Too Little
too
or something
little,
like
too
that.
Little, yeah.
Yeah, that was horrible. Like, he had a couple bad ones, and so he basically just didn't do anything for a couple of years. Came back and did Rushmore, just did the little part. And now he seems to do that. Like, he'll do, like, little parts that people really like in movies. And he's really... Like, just the Wes Anderson stuff alone, he's really, really good at.
Yep.
So... Yeah. But what do you think, Brian? You said before that if they made a Ghostbusters 3, you go and say it. And then you... Sounded like you might have reconsidered when I threw Blues Brothers 2000 at you. How do you feel
on
that
now? If they made it, I'd watch it.
Right, but
regardless of Bill Murray or not.
All right, let me rephrase the question, because I'll be honest, I'd see it too. But would you pay to see it?
Would I pay money to the theater to go see it?
Let's say, like, you happen to have the money. You have the money. It's summer.
You know,
are you going to go see it, or are you going to go see something else? Let's assume there's another movie you want to see.
If there's another movie, I might see it. It's hard to say. I hardly ever watch movies in the theater anymore. Like, 3, maybe 4 movies a year.
Okay, you got a few.
Is it going to be one of them? Probably not.
All right.
If it had Bill Murray, it probably would go up the list.
Let me do another one to gauge you on this, make it more realistic. Okay, so you got a few bucks and you see it. You don't have a Blu-ray player, do you?
No.
Okay, you have a few bucks and you see it on DVD. Are you going to buy it?
Yeah.
Without seeing it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's probably an endorsement then.
Like I said, I'd still go watch it. I'd still,
oh, yeah.
Okay. I'd still put money. I'm not... It wouldn't be one of those things I'd wait till it's basically free to see it.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm probably free on this one. Unless it was the right thing, like a bunch of friends wanted to go, then I might... In the right circumstance, I might go to... I go to a lot of movies, so that's not even a question for me. But, yeah.
I think I would expect it to be bad.
I might watch the commercials to gauge, I guess. But you expect it to be bad?
If Murray wasn't in it, but I would go anyways. I mean, probably the first week, just because it's been, like, a part of my life since as long as I can remember.
That's the thing, man. There's that nostalgia connected
well,
to it, too. Yeah. And quite frankly,
well,
the
there's
sequel...
enough people out, it still attached to it, that I think it'd still be worth watching.
Yeah, I guess it's like Peter Venkman was like my hero growing up. Like, you mix, like, Peter Venkman with Han Solo. That's, like, my... That's my dream right there. So that's what makes me sad. That you don't know who, get that part.
You know who Dan Aykroyd originally wrote for the part for Venkman for?
Was it John Belushi?
It was.
Yeah. I think we might have talked about that on the show. Like, he went through many, many different rewrites of the script. And originally it was, they were sort of like firemen in the future.
Yeah.
But for
yeah.
Ghosts. But everything Aykroyd wrote was for Belushi until Belushi died. Like, everything. Like, there's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas at one point had Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi attached. They were gonna do it. Like, they were so gonna do it. And, like, Dan Aykroyd was gonna be Hunter S. Thompson and John Belushi was gonna be Dr. Gonzo.
Wow.
And then Belushi died. It was still in development, but it sounded like it was gonna happen.
Actually just rewatched Where the Buffalo Roam.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, Bill Murray played Hunter S. Thompson, that's right.
Yeah, he did. There was a lot of people in that movie that I didn't realize were in it. What's his name? Ferris Bueller.
Oh, Matthew Broderick was
in it? He was one of the kids that was being tried for marijuana.
Oh.
He had a cameo.
Because he reached for his cigarettes and they thought it was a bomb.
Never seen it.
Yeah. So, I mean, like... I forget where I'm going. The thing of it is, too, though, that I worry about is, like, when's the last time Dan Aykroyd made you laugh? Like, other than rewatching old stuff?
It's been a while.
Yeah. And that kind of, that's almost a red flag for me, too, because he's I would imagine he's the main writer on that, or at least one of them.
Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis.
Yeah. But, although yeah. Ramis is still... Ramis is still solid.
Yeah, he directed Year One.
Yeah, and I actually enjoyed that. It's not... I don't know how rewatchable it is, but I definitely
enjoyed it.
It went. Like, yeah. It wasn't what I expected from the ads. But I enjoyed the hell out of it once I got over the shock of, like, this isn't what they advertised.
Which is so common.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
But it was sort of refreshing because I was like... I like it when you don't see the whole movie in the trailer.
Yeah. I get
so tired of that. You're like, why did I pay $4 or $5 to watch this?
You know why though? Because allegedly people want to go to the movies because they see it. Like the example that's always given is What Lies Beneath, that Harrison Ford, Michelle Pfeiffer piece of shit one, where I'll just give it away because they give it away in the trailer. Like spoiler, which was already on the trailer. So. Like, Harrison Ford kills this girl, and then Michelle Pfeiffer is being haunted and finds out it's a girl he killed. But the twist at the end is that she finds out that Harrison Ford, her husband, killed her. And they give it away. Like, literally the first thing they show you in the trailer is, like, him killing the girl. And it's like, so they just gave away the twist in the movie in the opening seconds of the trailer. But they said when they tested it, like, not giving it away, it didn't test well. And when they tested it showing the twist, everybody wanted to see it. So everybody goes in knowing what the twist is, and it to me, made the movie really, really lame. Because I'm like, when are they going to reveal that? I know this already, and then that's what the movie's built on. And you're like, what the fuck, man? It would be like going to watch The Sixth Sense and knowing that what's going to happen. Because let's be honest, dude. How many times you guys rewatched The Sixth Sense?
Rewatched zero.
Yeah. It's like I've seen clips, parts,
but like...
I watched it once and I'm like, wow, that's really clever. And then I watched the special scenes, you know, where they're like, oh yeah, we put red and that's fierce emotions and all this. And that's why I can't go through the red door. And Bruce Willis is always wearing the same clothes, but in a different combination.
Like, well, it would kind of feel like rewatching that.
Yeah, and I never did.
Never did.
Which is a testament to M. Night Shyamalan in a way. But I will say I rewatched Unbreakable a few times. That's a very rewatchable movie.
Which is that the Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis?
Which
is a very good movie.
It's an origin superhero movie.
Oh, God. We should have thrown spoilers on that. I'll put it in the intro so that people know, but... yeah, Unbreakable is the twist in that is that it's an origin super story. Because I don't think you really know it's a super story until the very end. Especially the Samuel L. Jackson being the villain. I suspected, but you're not really supposed to know until the end, you know?
I always wondered if they were going to make another one of those, but that probably would have just been like too cheesy.
It was a planned trilogy, but for some reason he never did the other two. He probably destroyed his career before he could get to the other two. I mean, can you imagine Bruce Willis or Samuel Jackson doing anything with him right now? I mean, his movies have just tanked to hell lately. So, and kind of with good reason, dude. He hasn't, I don't know. Have you seen anything? I should...
I haven't.
I shouldn't front here and pretend like I've seen them all, but they just look bad, dude.
What a twist.
Yeah. Signs was it for me. Once I saw Signs, I'm like, that I'm was so done with
it. Like,
yeah.
It's funny. I watched, my wife ran The Village.
Yeah. Which and everybody
I'm like,
has
I
told
do not,
is,
not want to watch this. And so I was off doing something.
It's the
something
worst
else
twist ever, and it's...
And I walking in, and I walk through the living room about halfway through, and I'm like, just glimpse at the TV for 30 seconds.
Hold on. All right, spoilers. What was it?
I was like, oh, it's not a real village. It's just people pretending to be in the 1800s. Walk away, and she's like, what the fuck? It's the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah. It's in the modern age.
And every single person I've talked to figured out the twist before it happened, it seems like. Did you figure it out?
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
I was like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
There were a few parts that were kind of cool in it, but yeah, overall, probably not up there, even in his work. But he kind of broke out of the box a little, like it was sort of a period piece, but I don't really follow Shyamalan at all.
Yeah, like I said, Signs was enough for me. Which, speaking of Mel Gibson, okay. Oh, is there anything he could do on film that would make you see another Mel Gibson film?
No, and that's...
You know, I actually watched one that wasn't too bad the other day.
I watched some of his old ones and I love them, but I just feel guilty watching anything new.
He did that movie where he has a puppet.
The Beaver.
Jodie Foster directed. I don't think I can sit down now, for that.
Okay, Jodie Foster and him. Did anybody see this?
I saw it.
Okay.
It wasn't bad.
I want to know, was there a scene where he goes, give me back my son!
You just scared the dog.
No, that's his clue that he's going out. I actually trained him to that. You want to hear barking? Watch this. Give me back my son!
He's over it.
Yeah, he knows it's a podcast. He's being a good boy.
Oh, man.
Was it good?
It was all right. Like, he plays a crazy person well.
Oh, good point.
That's about all I can say about it. It wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't great by any means, but it really showed his battle with depression well. So there was a lot of really good character stuff in it, but...
Yeah. That one almost made me want to watch it. The commercial, just because it's so friggin' crazy. The idea of it, Mel Gibson running around with a ham puppet.
Yeah, and he's like
it almost seems like
shit crazy. In there.
Yeah, like if he shit his pants constantly, I would swear it would be like a South Park thing.
That's a good point.
So what else you got on your list there?
Okay, well, 2011 has the record for the most sequels. There was 27 major motion pictures released last year that were sequels.
Wow, is that including prequels?
Oh, I would not know. I'll say no, but I don't know for sure.
No, you're probably right, dude, because it seems like that's a low number.
So yeah, you're right. I'm sure there was a lot more of them if you count all
the prequels.
Yeah, and everything. So I have the top five movies of last year. In domestic grosses, so just in America. Number one, not a big surprise, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Yeah.
$381 million. And then Transformers Part 3.
Hold on, the Harry Potter thing, isn't it ironic that it's like, what, Part 8? And they're like, they have a Part 2 in the title? That's how sequel crazy we've gotten, is that like...
It's a sequel to a sequel.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a sequel to Part 7.
Okay, so what was number 2?
Transformers.
Transformers 3.
Yeah, $352 million. The third one, Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, Part 1, $281 million. Number 4, The Hangover, Part 2.
I, you know, that was funny as hell, but I could not get past the fact that they were redoing the plot.
The exact same movie.
I could not get past that, dude.
I won't give away the spoilers in it.
If you've seen the one, you've seen two.
Yeah, it's the exact same formula, exact same outcome. They're just in Thailand instead of Vegas.
It is funny as hell. Like, it's not... I'm not saying don't watch The Hangover 2. It was actually fun and worth watching.
I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it.
But I could not get past the fact that it's like, come on, dude, you're telling the exact same tale. But what I've heard is the third one, Zach Galifianakis' character gets thrown into a mental institution. They have to rescue him. There's no, we forgot everything.
They are doing a third one?
They are doing a third
one. Of course they are.
They're not revisiting the same plot again. And in fact, the director made it known publicly that he didn't want to redo the plot. That it was forced on by the studio, and he eventually settled that if they got to do a third one where he could have complete control over it, that he would do the second one with that plot, but that was the only way he would do it. I think, what's his name, Todd Phillips or something,
yep,
the director?
I think you're right.
So, I guess let it be known, the third one sounds like it'll be better, but I just... It was funny. Like, I enjoyed it. The Ed Helms tattoo at the beginning, I really didn't suspect would happen.
But right there in the trailer, they let you know.
Yeah.
Like, remove the baby, put in a monkey.
Exactly.
Take out Vegas, put in Thailand. So that made $254 million last year. And then the fifth one on the list, which is the last one I have documented here, was the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean with $241 million. So that's five sequels. That's where the money is, you know.
And they're making another Pirates movie.
Oh, dude, they're gonna keep making those.
How many movies can you churn out of an amusement park ride? You know, that's they're rebooting the Haunted Mansion.
Again?
Yeah.
You mean the movie or the ride?
I think the movie, but I'm sure that they'll reboot the ride to make it like the movie.
You mean they didn't put in an animatronic Eddie Murphy in that thing?
Oh, I'm sorry, that was funny, Eddie Murphy. He doesn't do the laugh anymore.
No. So, I'm 31 years old. I thought it'd be kind of interesting to backtrack 30 years and talk about the domestic grosses of 1981. And so...
How many sequels?
Out of the top five?
Yeah.
One.
Okay, what was it? Well, actually, all right, read them off.
Okay, the first one was Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that did $209 million, not a sequel.
But soon to follow.
Yeah, maybe that.
You could almost see the genesis of it being ruined.
Yeah, that might be the origin, like Star Wars and Indy, like those were some of the biggest movies of the time. They were game changers. So number two, I had never heard of this movie. It's called The Golden Pond.
Oh, on Golden Pond?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. There's a reason you've never heard of it. How does this sound to you? A bunch of old people sit around a lake and talk.
Yeah. Pretty much. It starred Katharine Hepburn, Henry Fonda, and Jane Fonda. It made $119 million in 1981.
It was... If it didn't win Best Picture, it was up for Best Picture.
Oh, I'm sure, and that's why
it was, like, all Oscar buzz. And I don't know if it's a good movie. I shouldn't rip on it. I remember when I was a little kid seeing some of it being like, oh, this is boring.
Yeah. It was adapted from a play from...
Oscar Wilde, isn't it?
I don't know. 1979 is when the play came out from the same title. I have a synopsis of the film.
That was an old short story. Oscar Wilde rings a bell to me.
It might have been adapted from a short story to play. So what's it about?
Well, you pretty much summed it up.
Old people talk.
Yeah, it's about an aging couple that spend their summer at a cottage at a lake called Golden Pond. Their daughter visits and dumps off their boyfriend's son on them so they could have some alone time. You know what I'm saying?
They want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. The kid's annoyed at first, but then he bonds with the grandpa character and through their adventures on the pond. And then the daughter returns, and she's pretty envious of it all, that her dad bonded with his boy the way that she never did. And that's the movie, basically.
Oh, so then they interject like a mother-father story.
I'm assuming.
Maybe I should see it now that I'm a father. It might be an interesting... I like to, like... listen to the Cats in the Cradle all the time to remind me to do a good job.
One, two.
Yeah.
So number three, I know that you really like it. It was Superman 2.
Yeah.
That's the sequel in the top five.
Interesting thing about Superman 2 that I should throw out there. And I do love Superman 2, but the Richard Donner cut I love even more. And so this is the thing, like, maybe if you're a nerd, you know, but maybe not. Richard Donner did the first two Supermen almost entirely at the same time. There were planned to be two movies. And what happened was he got in a lot of fights with the producer because the producers basically wanted to ruin Superman 2. They wanted to do something completely different with the Superman franchise, and Richard Donner, like, you know, wasn't having it. And Superman was a success. It was such a big success that they realized they could fire the director because people are going to go to the second one no matter what.
Oh, wow.
So he finished about 4/5 of Superman 2, and there was just a little bit left, and then they got this other guy, Lester, something to step in and finish it and then cut it together.
Because it was cheaper that way, or...?
No, because they hated Richard Donner that much.
Okay.
And they didn't want to work with him anymore.
Wow.
And then that's also, there's also a little thing. Okay, so the first one, a lot of it is about his relationship with his dad, right? Like Marlon Brando's character. And it's like about the father and the son. The father sends the son to Earth to save it, like mm-hmm. Jesus. Well, the second one, it's suddenly his mother, and you're like, what the fuck? Like, why is it his mom all of a sudden? Like, where's his dad? That's because they realized that if they replaced him, that they didn't have to pay him for the second one, because they would have had to pay him the same amount for the second one they did in the first one.
Marlon Brando?
Though, yeah, even though they recorded his part already. So they plugged in his mom into that one, and that's why when you watch Superman Returns, they have Marlon Brando in it. Like, and a lot of people are like, how the hell did they get this footage? It's because it was used for Superman 2, and they wrote it.
And then they digitally enhanced, like, I've seen some stuff, behind-the-scenes stuff. They did a lot of altering, and they made Brando's mouth move when it wasn't moving, just with computers. And
yeah, because he was already, like, fat island of Dr. Moreau, Marlon Brando at that point.
Dude, he was already...
Bring me a sandwich!
He was, you know, 6 feet under when Superman Returns came out, but yeah. So number, and that one did $108 million. Number four, Arthur, $95
million. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
The original. The new one, not so much.
It's the same movie.
It's all right. It's not the same movie.
It's the same movie.
It's not the same movie.
I watched them both back to back.
Okay, I did too, and I enjoyed the remake, but it's not the same movie. And I'll tell you my biggest beef with the remake. This is really the only beef I have with the remake. I can go into the cosmetic stuff. We don't need to do all that. But here's my beef with the remake, dude. Okay. Arthur is a drunk who remains a drunk. And it's fun because he's a drunk. His girlfriend is a thief who remains a thief. Like, these are roguish characters. And the fun of it is they don't learn a lesson. They don't learn to do the right thing. Like, he gets stabbed with a cheese knife at the end because he does the wrong thing. But, like, it was all his fault to begin with. He gave in. He went to marry Susan because he's going to lose his money, right?
Yeah.
And then, at the wedding, like, does the most embarrassing situation by, like, backing out of it in front of everybody so he can go with this thiefish, like, girlfriend that he was tossing aside because, like, he wanted to keep his money. That was the charm of that movie, is that, like, they're bad characters at the start and they're bad characters at the end, but you love them anyway. In the movie, they wrapped it in with Arthur 2, which Arthur 2 is horrible. Because Arthur 2 is, like, he learns his lesson, he sobers up, he loses his money, he gets a real job, like, he straightens out everything, and then he's rich at the end. So they basically remade the first two movies, but I would contend if they wanted that to do well, which it did not do well, they should have just remade the first one and cast the second one aside. But we're in an era now where you can't have an alcoholic like that and just laugh at it if he's a main character. Like, you got to solve his problem. Yeah. You can't just have characters where you don't solve their problems anymore. Would you agree hearing that? Or I still enjoyed it. I'm not ripping on it outside.
The hard part I had watching the first one.
The original?
Yeah. Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, she
it was really tough rewatching it with her. Like,
but let's be fair, dude. Liza Minnelli.
I know that
annoying.
Was her prime, but like, oh my god,
she's annoying. I'm not taking that away, but she's perfect as that character. And furthermore, she's great in Arrested Development too, for what she's supposed to be. You know what I mean? Like that really gross older one.
You're talking about the TV show.
Yeah,
which they're making in
a movie.
Yeah, something about Netflix or something.
What they're doing is they're doing 10 brand new episodes
only
on
Netflix. Yeah,
only on Netflix. And what I've heard is what they're probably going to do is it. Each episode covers one of the characters in Arrested Development and where they've been since the show's gone off the air.
Oh,
and
weird.
Then the 10th one will show them all, and then it leads up to the movie.
Building
so if you want to get everything out of it, you have to watch the 10 on Netflix before the movie comes out.
That's cool. Yeah, you know, a lot of them are big stars now, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, I know. And they said Michael Cera was the difficult one, but he even got on board and agreed to take less money so that he could do it. Because, you know, I guess he's the big shit right now, so.
That's pretty funny. I like him, though. Okay, number five, Stripes. $85 million.
Great, that's a great,
great movie.
And no sequel.
No
that one and On Golden Pond never had sequels.
Yeah, they should have made a sequel of that one.
On Golden Pond
2.
The Next Generation. It's like old people from 2012.
The Pond Returns.
on Golden Pond 2, The Golden Shower.
Yeah, The Legend of Curly's Gold. I like to throw that onto the end of everything, dude. That was like the worst sequel title ever. As, what was it? The one with Billy Crystal.
City Slickers.
Yeah, City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold. I think we might have even gone to the theater
for
that.
We saw that one.
Yeah, we were too young to know better.
So I guess my point is, you know, there was only one sequel back then, and things have really changed. And I think that stories should be what's selling movies rather than, you know, star power and all these familiar concepts. But that's just not the way Hollywood works now.
Oh, those days are done, man.
Yeah,
it's all about franchises now.
Yep. And speaking of sequels, it's a huge year for James Bond.
They officially offered $60 million to pay the man.
Well, offered. Let me know when the...
$15 million more than Tennessee.
Yeah, let me know when he accepts it, dude.
So
you better get that dollar ready.
Sorry.
No, I was just saying, like, it's a monumental year for James Bond in cinema. It's the 50th year anniversary of Bond on film. Dr. No came out
in 1960. How many theatrical releases is that now?
Oh, like 23 or maybe even 20. I think 23.
They always have to say theatrical release because it confuses people because there was one that was released that was not a theatrical release. So
yeah.
This one looks like it's going to be... it was...
Let's see your trivia here.
It was one with Sean Connery and he's old as fuck and he's in a retirement home and they call him out. Kim Basinger's in it. They had a scene with a video game where, like, they hold on to it and the electricity... Yeah. The electricity gets more and more powerful the longer they're holding it. And so, like, him and the villain are, like, holding it. And there were some good scenes, but it wasn't a great movie.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've seen
Never Say Never was the name of the movie. I got it.
Wow. And you called him old back then. That was, like, 30-some years ago.
this was the thing. Like, Bond, you know, stays around the same age. And, when he did this, he hadn't had... It's, like, pre-hair plug Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he was balding and going gray and stuff, and he just didn't look the part of Bond anymore.
So, Skyfall comes out November 9th
that looks
of this year.
Good,
it looks
dude.
Really good, and here's some breaking news.
It looks good, man.
Do you
know who they got for a director?
Who's that?
Remind me.
No, I'm asking.
Is it Sam Mendes?
Yep, he's doing it.
Yeah, so the guy who did American Beauty, Away We Go. I'm trying to think of some of his other movies. Everything he's done is good. So
it should be solid. Yeah.
Doesn't sound Bondish to me.
Well, here's the breaking news on it. Is do you know who the main villain is now?
I used to.
As far as I know, this came out like a week ago publicly.
Is it Benedict Cumberbatch?
I don't see anybody in the credits.
I swear to God, it's a real guy, dude.
No. Xavier Bardot. Remember him? He was the main villain from No Country for Old Men.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah, he was the comedian in The Watchmen. Yeah. So you know he's just going to be an awesome villain.
Yeah, that's going to be badass. And what? Ralph Fiennes is in it.
Yeah.
His
Voldemort.
Wow. Hey, Judi Dench is in it.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Yeah, I know.
John Cleese?
I think they've done away with Q forever.
Well, Q's gone, but they are replacing him as John Cleese.
I know, but I think R is gone forever. and they changed him to Q. God, now I'm getting nerdy. But if you think back to the last one that John Cleese was in, the last Pierce Brosnan one, they call him Q in that because they wanted the audience to know R was a joke, but Q stands for quartermaster, and he was now the quartermaster. So, not interesting, I guess.
Yeah, they kind of ended that, when Daniel Craig took over.
I've not gotten behind the Daniel Craig.
Really?
We talked about this. I disagree with you.
I think they're good on their own. They're just not Bond for me.
I hear what you're saying because Bond is bad movies, but they're fun bad movies. And this is actually like a good movie, so it doesn't feel like Bond sometimes. But I like it, man. I still enjoy it.
It's way too real for me. But it's like watching real. Saving the one I watched it about
Casino Royale.
No, it was
Quantum of Solace. It wasn't the best one.
And it was like watching Saving Private Ryan. I mean, there's bullets flying every which way.
Yeah.
It
wasn't as good as Casino Royale. I thought Casino Royale was badass too. He was bursting through walls in that construction site like he was Kool-Aid man. I was like, oh yeah! It was awesome.
It was. I think Casino Royale ran a little long for me.
It did. They all, honestly, every Bond movie runs is under
2 hours, I think.
It's still, they typically run around 2:15.
Quantum Solace seemed to drag really.
Yeah, it does. It drags apart. It's not the best one, I'll admit that, but I still liked it.
You gotta think though, my
favorite... I liked, there were parts of it, the Quantum Solace I really liked where he shows up to that one play and he's like taking pictures of everybody in the crowd. And like sending him back to MI6, like live feeding. I thought that stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
But.
So you won't see this one? It is an entirely different director. I mean, it's.
Not only that, but they're starting the story kind of fresh. It's not linked to Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, they're not doing another. Because Quantum of Solace you cannot see unless you've seen Casino Royale. Nothing makes sense. It's like, it takes place like literally a minute after Casino Royale ends.
Yeah.
Like that's where it starts the movie, so, and it's completely linked, which was kind of, it was a nice idea, I guess. That's why I was bored, because I never did that in Bond movies before. Like really the only thing you ever see carry over,
Spectre.
Well, but he doesn't even seem to have a history with the villains. Like he'll see him again, but they don't really address what they ever did with each other, you know what I mean? Like they have lots of villains that carried over. But the only plot point I ever really remember carrying over was when his fiance died.
Yeah.
And that one. And they made reference to it twice, but just reference to it. So I like that they continue the story, but I don't want to see it again.
And there were
it's good trivia.
Yeah, there were one or two characters, that wasn't Craig or Judi Dench that carried over.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah, there's always a couple characters that carry over, except for GoldenEye is like the lone exception. Because they just completely rebooted it at GoldenEye, so.
Which my is favorite Bond movie.
Oh, it's up there for me. It's
the scene where he's driving through Moscow in the tank is awesome.
Yeah. I know, best intro ever too, where he's at the Russian place and he's running through.
Oh, where he steals the jet.
Well. I think it was a regular plane, but what it was like he rappels down the side of a
the dam,
right? He gets in and was it Sean Bean was like the bad guy 00. Who you don't know is the bad guy at the beginning? Yeah, he's like 006 or something.
Yeah,
and And they pretend like they kill him, and then he gets out of there. Like, he's got all these Russians facing him. He's by all these explosive barrels, and he, like, slides it over so he can get past them. And they're, which is stupid, because they all just watch him. Like, when you run up and, like, grab him, you know what I mean? But they just watch. I remember one guy takes a shot at him, and then the leader shoots that guy in the head because he tells him not to shoot at the barrels. And then they all chase him once he gets out of the room. And he, like, this is the best part. He hops on a motorcycle and he's going away from him. They're catching up with him. And he's about to hit a cliff and there's a plane going off right at the same time.
Of course.
Without a person in it. And he, like, which didn't make sense. But, yeah. Or maybe, no, he kills the guy in the, that's right, he shoots or something, or a stray bullet kills the pilot. The plane goes over the edge of the cliff. Bond goes over the edge of the cliff with the motorcycle. Like, basically skydives into the plane, which was actual stunt work. Somebody did that. Like, skydives into the plane and then pulls it up before it hits the ground. That was pretty badass.
That was awesome.
Yeah. You gotta say, as far as Daniel Craig, he does almost all of his own stunts. He does stuff that, like, you know, the previous Bonds, they would have never touched.
Well, and I like him as Bond, too. I'll say that. A lot of people are like, oh, he doesn't have dark hair and all this stupid shit.
They're calling
hair him color doesn't.
James yeah, Blonde but is what they were calling him at first.
Whatever.
James Blonde.
Yeah.
I think I remember hearing that now that you said
and
that.
And they had, like, pictures of Gollum, like, screenshots of Daniel Craig smiling next to pictures of Gollum smiling.
He does look like a broken person in the face. I don't know, like, and I remember trying to, like, picture him as Bond, and I was like, give him a shot, because everybody was so rough on him before the movie came out. But I remember what, like, the only movie I knew with Daniel Craig at the time was Road to Perdition.
Yeah.
And I would sit there and watch him as the you know, he's the evil brother of Tom Hanks in that movie, and I just, like, how is this guy gonna be Bond? Like, just this cowardly little guy, and then you realize, like, no, that he's a freaking big strapping dude.
Oh yeah.
And it just goes to show what a good actor he is, really.
Well, and you look back at all the previous Bonds, and you know, they're dated. You can't have that Bond. You can't have, yeah, you know,
even GoldenEye, as much as I love it, I watched it like 2 months ago, and it's so 90s, man.
Yeah.
Like, you listen to the music, and it's like, and you're like, oh, jeez.
Roger Moore is my favorite Bond, but there's no way that would work nowadays, you know?
Roger Moore was my favorite, but the older I get, the more I'm drawn to Connery, and maybe it's because he's in better Bond movies. Like, with Russia with Love, or To Russia with Love is a great movie. GoldenEye is great. Like, those are two of the best, I think.
GoldenEye?
Goldfinger, I'm sorry. But Roger Moore's are all kind of bad. And
oh,
even
they're
ones,
campy.
Yeah, and yeah, even the one that I like really like,
my favorite is
racist as hell. So I have a hard time watching that. Which is Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great one. It's campy, so it doesn't hold all that well. But, like, and Dr. Quinn is a young woman, hot as hell, Jane Seymour. But they just have all this racial, like, stereotyping all over it, and it's just, like, they're really difficult to watch now, because you, like, it's almost like you want to watch it with kids, because they're so campy, but then you're like, that's not right.
Well, let me think. The Spy Who Loved Me is probably my favorite Bond movie of all time.
That's a great one.
And you know what? Jaws was scary as hell in that movie.
That was the first time he was in it, yeah.
He was horrifying. And then they turned him into, you know, the, like, monsters.
Moonraker, yeah.
The monsters, you know, and Moonraker, which I still enjoy.
But I would maintain that he was frightening in that, but at the same time, like, campy as hell. Like, they have the scene where the pyramid collapses.
Yeah.
And he's inside it, and then he goes, and moves the bricks. It's practically Frankenstein at that point.
Yeah, you're right.
More like Bruce Banner to me.
All right, fair enough.
The scene when he pops out of the closet on the train. Now, that's scary to me.
Yeah.
But then you look, and then he flies through the window. Bond, you know, miraculously shows up and kicks him out a window. And if you look at the scene, you can tell that the stunt double was probably like 5'6". just a little guy as he's going through this one. It's like huge jaws, I don't know, 7 feet tall, and then they get this little guy, you know, to come in.
It's not even close to Richard Kiel's size.
No.
Gay Gary's dad and mom met Richard Kiel, the guy who plays Jaws, in Vegas.
Whoa.
They saw him, like, next to a blackjack table. I don't remember the story beyond that, but I always thought that was cool, dude.
That's way cool.
Wouldn't it be cool if he, like, smiled and he had those teeth and you're like, whoa, like he was a method actor or something? What's your favorite Bond scene that they will never do again in the movies? You know what I mean? Like, that you could never get away with nowadays. Mine is Diamonds Are Forever. At the very beginning, they have a scene where, like, Sean Connery is, like, he's interrogating this girl, and he knows that she knows something, and she's denying it, and he whips off her bikini top and starts to strangle her with it to get the information. Like, that's the opening scene, dude.
And that was probably a PG movie at the time.
No, it was.
They didn't have PG-13 and...
Yeah.
Wow.
Or R.
I don't know.
They had R, but...
I have to think about it, but you're right. There's a lot of shocking scenes in those early movies that were like, this is the good guy.
Yeah, you know? Well, Bond's never supposed to be a good guy. He's just the asshole you root for. Because the other assholes are worse than him. Until you get to Casino Royale, and I think... cause, like, the Daniel Craig Bond, you can say, is a legitimate good guy. Like, the other ones are
Well, the way they went into his death, like, his first kill as an, you know, as an operative in Casino Royale, you, like, you know, made you feel it, did he? Like, you can tell... That wasn't easy for him.
Well, and the whole thing, he actually gets his heart broken and stuff. But it actually kind of shows, what I liked about it was they showed, like, how he got hard. Like, how he does what he does. Which I hope they kind of go back to in this one. But, like, Quantum of Solace fixed that one thing. Because in Casino Royale, they're like, what drink would you like? He's like, martini. And they're like, would you like it shaken or stirred? And he goes, do I look like I give a damn? Just, like, really mad. And then at Quantum of Solace, he's, like, shaken, not stirred. Like, because you could tell he, like, enjoyed the shaken one. See, that's heading into real nerdy territory right there.
That's okay.
Something with, there was a line right before that. He's like, I want a drink. Something with vermouth and vodka.
Oh, was that what he said? Yeah. Well, what else is going on in the world here? I think we fucked out Bond here.
Well, I don't know. I just had some comic talk, but I don't know how up you are on, like, the whole Justice League and all that, like, New 52 stuff.
I don't know what's going on with the Justice League. I got the first one. I loved it, but I'm kind of... I don't buy issues as much anymore. I like to buy trades. Like, I go in and I'll buy... And I hate it. I don't know. I sound like an ass when I say that to a lot of guys who like comics, but I just like to have a whole story right there. I like that they don't get bent
easily. I have a hard time remembering what happened.
You know, yeah, from issue to issue.
It's like a six-month gap, you know, from the beginning of the arc to the end of the arc sometimes. So it's kind of hard to keep
up. And it's not a long storyline.
No.
Yeah. But sometimes it's like a year, though.
Yeah.
Like
if you put all the timeline together in the story, it's not a big story. But when you spread it out over a whole year, it seems like a lot more.
Yeah, like that, I got a Spider Island graphic novel. It's Spider-Man, like, everybody in Manhattan gets Spider-Man powers, which is fucking awesome. Like, everybody, dude. Everybody gets Spider-Man
Window powers. Cleaners must have just been horrified.
Yeah, well, and you have, like, all these regular people that turn to crime, and other people are fighting and fucking up stuff, and, like, yeah, it's a giant mess. But that was 12 issues of Spider-Man. Plus, it was, like, 6 issues of Venom, I want to say, or something like that. So
crossover.
18 issues in there, man. But Spider-Man puts out, like, 3 books a month now, I think. But still, you're talking, like, 4 months of freaking storyline there, man. That's just, like, that would have costed so much, too, to just get every single issue to, like, collect it all. And then you wouldn't even know which ones to grab because everything was doing Spider-Island for a while there in Marvel.